From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
And the Media Project is back underway. Welcome to it. Glad to have you here at the studios of WAMC in Albany, New York. I'm Ira Fussfeld, retired publisher of the Daily Freeman of Kingston, New York, and I'm joined by Alan Shartok, the chief cook and bottle washer here at WAMC. Alan, hello.
There is that, and how do you do?
Nice to see you. And also joining us is Judy Patrick, the editor of the Daily Gazette of Schenectady, New York. Judy, yeah. Welcome back.
You know, it is really nice to be here and to see you guys again.
You've been in that office too long.
I have, and I've escaped.
You've escaped. Well, I want to start by springboarding off of something that I heard you, Judy Patrick, and Alan discussing just the other day on this station on the morning program, The Roundtable. But, Judy, you were talking about speaking at a local Rotary Club and the discussion about the media. Can you revisit that for us?
Sure. I was at this East Schenectady Rotary Club, and it was a morning meeting, and they were fascinated by this issue of trust in the media. In fact, I find that wherever I go, people want to talk about what's biased, what's not biased, how they can judge the news. And it's an incredible amount of interest in it. I thought this story had no legs, as we say, and that people would tire of discussing this. But any place I go, people want to talk about this. I was at a program with Rex Smith,
Smith, our erstwhile leader.
At the Schenectady Library a few weeks ago, and the room was filled. People care about this issue.
And which side are they coming down?
You know, people who tend to turn out for a community forum like that tend to be in favor of the press and don't attack the press. But I get the calls, and I'm sure, Alan, you get calls from people who don't trust the press.
Oh, no, we hear from them during that time. It's a very interesting intellectual exercise. I have to tell you, Judy, I always play the bad guy when it comes to this on the air, which is I don't believe anything is unbiased. I'm a believer that when you choose a story to be on the front page, that shows your values. You know, any one of the sex stories shows up on the front page, but when Rex does it, often it shows up on page 3 in a smaller place. So I think that people have values and editors make decisions, and those decisions are reflective of their characters and who they are.
You know, bias is a loaded term, though, because bias implies that you're doing something nefarious when actually it's judgment, I think, we're using. Certainly, I agree in the conversation last week that we do make decisions and we're going to make imperfect decisions, but we don't make decisions to sell newspapers, for example. I can tell you that rack sales of newspapers don't depend on what's on the front page. Those days are gone where if you put a headless body in the front page, the sales are going to go through the
roof. See, now that surprises me. And we have a couple of letters that came in after last week's program in which there was a discussion on this subject. And we have one letter from a guy who described himself as the former controller of the Berkshire Eagle, for which Alan writes a column. And he says, I would often walk into the conference room next to my office to find front pages on the wall, and I would see a whiteboard where there'd be a corresponding single copy circulation numbers for each edition on the wall. Point being that the editors should be and were aware of circulation numbers. And there was a discussion last week that I thought I misheard, but Alan's point about sex selling and that editors make decisions based on sex stories to sell newspapers. And I don't want to misquote Kalen and or Rex, and they're not here to defend themselves, but I thought I heard both of them, particularly Kalen, saying that editors don't pay attention to what sells when they make story selections. And that's entirely foreign to my experience.
I just want to point something out for the sake of the historical record. That's Dr. Kalen Brown.
Yes, Dr. Kalen Brown.
Who is now a professor of journalism, but who practiced journalism for a long time.
Let the record be noted.
Yeah. Okay. That said, when you sit down with your editors to determine what's going to be on the front page on a daily basis, isn't one of the considerations what you think is going to sell your paper
No.
Wow.
No.
I deny it.
What I'm trying to do every day is establish our credibility, and I want people to subscribe to our newspaper, go to our website, because they believe we are the credible news source. I think all the good revenue issues flow from that. I don't think advertisers buy our advertisement in our paper based on our content. I think it's based on our audience.
How do you get an audience?
How do I get an audience? By being credible. And again, I'm telling you, with all the front page stickers and the front page advertising, and we have something called spadias that cover the page. Often when you go to a newspaper or a store to a local convenience store and look for the newspapers on the rack, you can't even see the main headline.
You're right about the spadias, which for the people who have never heard the phrase, that's sort of like a half a page of an advertisement that overlaps on the front page and obscures part of the front page.
Or some kind of sticker over
exactly.
The
yeah.
But I don't want to suggest that your paper, for example, would run sex stories to sell newspapers. But I would say that there are newspapers who feel that they're comfortable doing that. But the stories that you select, even if they're not sex stories, are stories that you think are important
or interesting, and
would sell newspapers.
I think they're interesting. I know I have to be cognizant of the revenue it will eventually produce, but my primary mission is to put out a credible newspaper or maintain a credible news site every day. And I think, again, all the goodness flows from that.
Well, I think, look, a lot has to do with your community. A lot has to do with the values of your community and what they would be accepting of, you know, or not. There are some people who might want to run a more boring newspaper in order to be protective of themselves. You know, I mean, I think that the self-serving nature of all of you, you and Rex and Kaylin, has always been,
community serving.
We don't do anything wrong ever. Everything we do is correct. We're here just to meet the public's interest. But I mean, you got to know it's a powerful story when you're choosing them, and you do choose them, Judy.
We do know what powerful stories are, but I think the days of that affecting newsstand sales are gone.
Okay, well, let's just move that aside, because I don't want to beat this dead horse. Nay, because it isn't a matter of newsstand sales as much as it is of your interest, of what you intuitively think will make somebody in the morning pick up the Schenectady paper and say, this is really interesting stuff. I like my paper because I'm interested in it as opposed to bored by it.
Yeah, and I'm not suggesting that Judy is doing this, but you do not have to apologize for putting stories in the newspaper on the front page that are going to help sell the newspapers. Again, Alan made a key point. I think I've told the story a number of times about whether or not a community accepts certain stories. And so there are communities where newspapers can get away with being more exploitive of sex and other subjects. And then there are other communities, typically most of the smaller communities, that would not accept it. You could put a sex story on the front page and they would not sell more papers because the readers in those communities don't want it on the front page, don't want it in their house.
Yeah, Ira, but is it a question of selling more, or is it a question of keeping this audience interested in what they're doing? Look at this monster, Harvey Weinstein. Golly, as Rex would say, golly gee whiz, Martha. Look at this guy. He's an animal. And that is interest. It's not a matter of who buys the paper off the stand.
Yeah, maybe this is semantics. I'm not trying to just sell newspapers. I'm trying to grow an audience. But it's essentially the same thing because the audience brings the revenue.
You also made a point, and again, now I've been retired almost 4 years, so maybe things...
Which makes you a better man, by the way.
It makes me a less tense man. But newsstand sales and rack sales, stories above the fold on the front page, that's what made people decide whether or not, or it could make people decide whether or not to buy the paper.
Well, you know, Alphonse D'Amato said it best. He said, that was then and this is now.
Yeah. Well, I had an editor once who told me, never apologize for trying to put stuff in the newspaper that will try to sell the newspaper, because if we don't sell the newspaper, there is not going to be a newspaper. So,
It's fun when you're here because, you know, I mean, I love Rex, you know that. But, you know, Rex and Kaylin, they team up on me and they say, basically, anything that the newspapers do is good. It's all right. We're good. Everybody else is bad. Don't ever question us.
Well, let the record show this will be one of the very rare opportunities for me to agree with Alan, at least on this point. Normally, I'd be very happy to gang up on you. And the program is still short. We've got plenty of time to do that. Let me ask you both a question, because I don't know the answer. Does Andrew Cuomo conduct a Christmas party for the media? Is there a party in the at the Capitol?
Well, there used to be.
I don't know. I never went. And Mario, his father, would reach out to me and say, you know, you're welcome, even though you're not part of the press corps.
But it was specifically for the press.
It was specifically for the press.
And what is there, Judy? Or,
I didn't go.
You didn't
I have
go.
Very strong opinions that, that is wrong. I do not think the Washington press corps should go to the White House for a holiday party with the president. I don't think the local state reporters should go to the governor's house because it's a gift. They will defend it as this is our way of establishing sources and relationships, and it will eventually provide us more good stories. But I've seen the photos of the reporter and his mother hanging with the president. And I mean, that's a golden gift. And can you imagine what a good gift that is to the mother? It's essentially something of value they're getting by going to these parties. You shouldn't fraternize with your sources.
By the way, Judy, in this instance, the president didn't want to be with the press any more than they wanted to be with him.
And for the uninitiated, this comes up because the annual presidential Christmas party for the media, which took place last week, caused Celebra in part because CNN said it was not going to send its people there.
Good for them.
And that several reporters, most prominent of whom I believe would be April Ryan, who is the people have become familiar with her if you watch the press briefings. She is the reporter from the Urban Network, I believe it's called, a radio reporter. She was simply not invited to the party, and she was
just an oversight, you see.
Yeah, just an oversight.
Just the fact that you happen to be African American was
only African American, but somebody who has asked some very stiff questions at the
absolutely, but it really had a bad smell to it.
Yeah.
Because she is not exactly typical of the press corps.
But can you imagine the chutzpah of the president and the, I don't even know what the right word is for the media who attended, after 11 months of Trump beating up on media in a way that other presidents have not, and calling us the enemy of the people and calling everything we do fake news, that these people would be willing to go to a Christmas party hosted by this guy. It's beyond my comprehension.
Well, from my perspective, I don't care if it's Donald Trump or Barack Obama, they shouldn't be going to these things. I'm also not a big fan of these correspondent association dinners.
Yes, we've discussed that on
this
program.
I agree with you, and I've agreed with you for years on that.
Yes.
And I have argued this out a number of times, and you know, some of the times they come to the legislators themselves and they say, can you buy a table? That happens to be corrupt.
I came to that realization when I was looking at one of the local lawmakers, his expenses, how he spends his campaign contributions, and I saw that he had bought a table at the LCA show. So, you know, I'm sure that those reporters who may be listening, write in and explain to us why that's a good idea.
I know what they'll say. We give some of the money to charity. And so, therefore, it's all right for us to do this.
But what it winds up doing, among other things, is it reinforces in the mind of some in the public that at the end of the day, the press and the political class are all of one for all. What's it?
Yeah, all for one, one for all.
Three Stooges used to say, all for one for all, and every man for himself. But it hurts the credibility, in my view, of the press when they socialize with politicians in such a manner. And as Alan pointed out, I don't think the current president cared to be there any more than some of the press.
Well, he left after a very short time.
He left, and he did not do what Judy said has happened in the past, which is hang around for 2 hours to pose for pictures with all the reporters. So this is the Media Project. I'm Ira Fussfeld with Judy Patrick and Alan Chartok. Brian Ross, the name ring a bell?
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about Brian Ross, veteran ABC investigative reporter, goes on the air with a story about the president saying that the president as a candidate was playing footsie with Russia, an incorrect story. Later he clarified it, and they thought they could get away with simply clarification.
Wait. Who believes that the president isn't playing footsie with Russia? We know.
Not necessarily as a candidate.
We know his group has been playing a lot of footsie.
But the key error in Brian Ross's report was using only one source, that it was as a candidate, which is an important distinction to make versus what he may have done even after he was elected and before he was sworn in. Originally, they just did a basic clarification. The anger built and the pressure built, and ABC suspended him without pay for a month. And the ABC news president, was allegedly furious in discussing this matter with his staff. Does a great disservice to all of us in the press when something like this happens, particularly in this climate, no?
You know, I'm really old now. And I remember Brian Ross for all of these years. He's one of the first people who did investigative reporting for his network. And I think what happens is after a while, you love getting major stories, and it's tempting to have a major story when it may be incorrect.
And the unanswered question here is, what happened to whatever editor or producer allowed this to go through? Was there some sort of conversation about what's your source on this? How do you know for sure that it's true? Or is network news, or nowadays, they just put it up on the air as fast as they can, and they trust these reporters not to have to, this important conversation with the editor to justify what this anonymous source is and why we should believe it. The Trump administration blamed this story for a 300-point drop in the Dow, which is a serious situation.
You know, Judy, you make a great point. I really do think so. The relationship between the producer and the actor in this case becomes all important. If you've been a guy who's been breaking stories and they've been working for ABC, you know, for 30 years or whatever it is, and you have a 30-year-old reporter, producer, I'm not saying what he does because I don't know, they got to give him an awful lot of space.
I'll tell you one thing that has troubled me long before Brian Ross and any of the other transgressions that news outlets make is that, generally speaking, when a newspaper or a broadcast outlet realizes or is made aware of the fact that it has made a mistake, it will own up to the mistake, it will run a correction, it will apologize, and at least ostensibly will pledge itself to do better the next time. When those mistakes occur, particularly in a political story, you hear these politicians scream and kick about this mistake, and as certainly our president has done. When was the last time you heard a politician caught in a similar kind of mistake that of their making say, oh, I made a big mistake, I'm sorry, and I'm going to promise to do better the next time?
Well, in the sex scandals, they do. Some of them do, right? They say, oh, yeah, I was offensive, and I want to apologize to anybody I may have offended, that kind of thing, right? That happens. But let me just say that I love reading the corrections in the paper, and I particularly love reading them in the New York Times. The less significant... This is my absolute opinion, and it has nothing to do, perhaps, with reality. But the less significant the mistake, the more likely you are to see the correction at the bottom of the page. You know, I recently wrote a column for the Berkshire Eagle in which I referred to the name of, well, somehow it got in. The name of the coffee shop I was writing about was Botanica as opposed to Botanical. Well, a relative of the owner, it was a very favorable review, by the way, the relative of the owner called in and said, that's not right, you know, it's Botanica, not Botanical. And you should have seen the spate of letters from the editors saying, we're going to make that correction, we're going to have it at the bottom, Botanica as opposed to Botanical.
Well, I've used this example a number of times. A former reporter of mine who used to work for UPI, so he had some chops in really good quality factual reporting, he said, you could cover a meeting of the Kingston Common Council, and it could be the best story ever in the history of journalism. If you say Washington Street instead of Washington Avenue, which is what it's called, it's going to jump out at people in the community who know that it's Washington Avenue. And not only that, it's going to throw in question the accuracy of everything else in the story because of a mistake like that.
Right. I think for us in the media, credibility remains very, very important. And I think in the political sphere, facts don't matter so much anymore. I think maybe 10 years ago, politicians would try to correct the record if they truly got something wrong. But nowadays, you're right, Alan. I haven't seen many, oops, we got this wrong. This is the right way to do this. Hopefully it's because they're not making a lot of mistakes. But from what I see, we're getting a lot of errors in presentations from politicians nowadays.
Well, and as has been discussed, with the advent of the digital platform and the speed with which stories have to get out there and the volume of stories that are now generated by beleaguered staffs that are understaffed compared to recent years, the potential for mistakes has increased dramatically.
Well, and the potential to have them replayed to you, too. I mean, a generation ago, whatever was broadcast was out there, and maybe the stations had the tapes, but they didn't regularly release them, so we didn't know unless somebody was out there taping it. Nowadays, anything that's said on this station or on any television station, easily captured and replayed and replayed and replayed.
And it is, and we hear from people.
Yeah.
Well, the Poynter Institute, a major think tank, did a survey in November. And based on responses from 2,100 survey participants whose news consumption habits were tracked, Republicans have vastly more negative views of the press than do Democrats and are more likely to support restrictions on press freedom. While Democrats with high political knowledge say they have the most faith in the press, Republicans with high political knowledge are the most distrustful of the press, more so than Republicans with low political knowledge.
I'm sure that's absolutely true. The motivation for that is what we should be talking about. My feeling is that the Republicans right now, for example, let me give you an example just for the hell of it. About 29% of the American people like the tax program that is on the boards right now. Most of the others, almost all of them, hate it. And it is up to the press to draw the line between 1 and 1 and 2 is 2, because at the point at which we see how badly the American public think about this. On the other hand, if you poll the Republicans, we're talking about the whole country, 29%, you poll the Republicans, they like it.
Well, almost half of Americans, according to this survey, 44%, indicate they believe the news media fabricates stories about President Trump more than once in a while. And a substantial minority also indicate that they agree with a claim that Trump made that the media are the enemy of the people. I mean, I just find it's so hurtful to me as a journalist, spent 45 years in journalism, to hear that 44% of the country believes that the press fabricates stories.
Well, and I think this issue of the preponderance of Republicans who distrust the press more so than Democrats is a serious issue that we need to address. And we just
how do you address it?
By being mindful of to make sure that we are not introducing bias into our
story.
Now,
you know, you and I have a big problem on this.
We had this conversation the other day. Yes, because Alan is concerned that we are going to try to bend over backwards trying to make the Republicans happy. That's not what we're trying. That's not the idea. We just need to be cognizant that there are other viewpoints other than Democratic or liberal viewpoints, and that these people are thinking this for a reason. And one of the reasons is I think sometimes the media makes fun of Trump supporters, or they'll make fun of Republican positions. You hear that.
The deplorables?
The deplorables. And I think that just because you're a Trump supporter doesn't mean you're stupid or lazy. You might have a really strong, legitimate reason. There are a reason these people are supporting. They're not all stupid. They need to be listened to.
No, but I hear you, but I'm concerned. As you know, we have had this little argument between us. I'm concerned that when you say we have to be sensitive to the Republicans and to what
they just like we are the Democrats.
Well, you know, Judy, there is something in this world called truth. Truth. The truth of the matter is you take 26 million Americans' health care away from them. That's very important. And if you have Republicans who are saying, nah, it doesn't really matter, you know, it is important to let people know exactly what's happening. No?
That is true. But you have to listen to the arguments of people who are against that, because it's not that they hate poor people or that they don't think poor people should be denied health care. They have legitimate reasons. So listen to them. Try to figure out where they're coming from. This country is never going to.
I forget what the legitimate reason is in that case.
But the point is that the country is never going to come together unless you truly try to take a moment and listen to what people are saying. Many of the Trump supporters believe that government is dysfunctional, that Washington is just in it for themselves, which is a fairly legitimate cause for concern.
Well, I just think, and I'm not saying something that you haven't heard 500 other times before this, but the amount of damage that Trump has done to the institution of the press and to other democratic institutions in this country is such that it will take a generation, if not longer, to undo. I mean, the results of that survey and
by the Pointer Sisters.
Yeah, by the Pointer Sisters. The survey proves that he has succeeded in throwing in doubt the efficacy of the press. And the press has all sorts of problems, and the press has worked very hard to not have those problems. But people are simply who do not believe the press and do not believe in facts. How does a country like ours or any country get by without agreeing on basic sets of facts?
But to be honest, that decline in the trust has been going on well before President Trump.
But he's made it worse?
It's continued on the decline, but I don't think there's been a dramatic drop.
We're out of time.
We are.
Too bad. I loved having Judy and Ira on the program this time, because you're both very argumentative and very good.
But we did agree with you once in a while. That didn't hurt. That's it for today.
Unusual.
I'm Ira Fussfeld with Alan Shartuck and Judy Patrick. Thanks for joining us on The Media Project.
Now, newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage, ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy's an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.